different refractive indexes or two different velocity factors or two different dielectric constants. There's many ways you can look at it. And he talks about the extraordinary wave and the ordinary wave, the clockwise wave and the counterclockwise wave. So he gives a much better explanation that goes way beyond what we're discussing with Faraday rotation. However, let me drop for a minute here. You came up today, Mel. It turns out that the president of the American Radio Relay League, the very first time a lady has been the president, Kay Craigie, N3KN, she and her husband, Carter, N3AO, have installed in their home in Blacksburg, Virginia, they have installed a full wave loop antenna on 80 meters, and they have been feeding it with open wire in only the differential mode. I can tell by asking Mr. Carter and Kay, Carter and Kay, I have been asking them, were you feeding it the differential mode as well as the common mode? And they said, gee, please explain what that is. And I told them a little bit about what you have discovered in the last few years of experimenting with different ways of feeding the ladder line of a full loop antenna. And their eyes perked up, their ears perked up, and I can tell they're going to want to know more about what you found and when they want to apply it to their particular antenna. So let me ask you the question, Mel. Do you know of this common mode versus differential mode that you've been experimenting with? Is there any other book or a reference or a website or whatever that has any information on that? Or is all of it coming from Dover Street in Manhattan Beach, Brooklyn, Long Island, at the QTH of K2KEY? Is that the only source of information about the potential benefits of the electronic tuning of differential versus common mode feeding of a full-wave loop antenna? They're going to want to know that. And if you're the only guy, I guess they're going to have to visit you, Mel. You better get a lot healthier faster. I'm making a very terrible joke here. K2KEY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, very good, Dick. Well, I'm not going to in any way say that I originated a number of these experiments, because it's been one or two here or there have been alluded to in small articles and things, and some of it I picked up from the loopers that I met on 75 meters. There's quite a number of them that have gone a lot further. I mean, huge loops. I'm dealing with like on 80 meters, a one-wavelength loop. But I've talked to people with multi-wavelengths of loop, not only on 80, but 160. You can imagine how much wire we're talking about, but putting up there, how many supports, but they have the territory in many places, poles and things that they're big trees, so they were able to, you know, go and try larger loops. But I guess my experiment more or less came to a lot of surprises. Now, I am sure. Now, loop is not a new antenna. It sort of disappeared. You got to realize for a long time after the Second World War, coaxial cable, when it came into general use, let me let it drop. You know, before World War II, coax cable, especially amongst amateur radios, was almost an unknown item. After World War II, they threw out tons of it on the surplus market, and hams picked up on it. Of course, Collins was a company that really pushed the unbound system, the PI networks and all, really pushed by the Collins company, and as a superior system to what was used by all common hams during the 30s, like I say, was common open wire feeders. As you have said many times, many of them had their ham equipment in the attic, and the dipole, you know, one side went out one side of the attic, the other side came out, went out the other, and sort of link coupled to the transmitter, which of course was the common way of doing things. But I sort of resurrected, you could say, some of that, because I am using open wire feeders, yes, I'm using link coupling tuner, and I found that just by hit and miss, really, the effect of, you would think, as I went through, we went through a very good discussion on this, if you remember, a number of times. Let me let it drop. And it'll be on amateurradio.tv about the situation that if you were to adjust the tuner for minimum SWR, not necessarily it would produce the best signal in that particular direction that you would, you know, that you would like to talk to that person. That many times I throw it out, go through, and see that I'm unbalancing the balance system by putting more current into one side of the open wire feeders than the other, which would actually, you know, displaying a higher SWR, beneficial. So, you know, there's a lot more going on here than, you know, to casually peruse over and all. So we've discussed this in detail, but there's no doubt there's a lot of room for experiments, and like you said, electrically steering an antenna over.
Yeah, we amateurs have only made partial use of electronic steering techniques because the way they're explained in the books, the theory of operation, is always expressed in a way that's very difficult to understand. And by way of the technique, we've attempted to make it a little more understandable so more people can do it. And when it comes to loop antennas, you are aware of a lot of people that have experimented with loops that are high, low, multiple wavelengths on a side, bigger, smaller, whatever. I still think, though, Mel, that not many of those people have realized that the way you unbalance, so to speak, the loop coupling to the open wire feeder so that you can slowly adjust between the differential mode and the common mode of feeding the open wire line of a loop antenna and the benefits that you've gotten out of that. And they differ on transmit versus receive, and they differ on Monday versus Tuesday, state of the ionosphere and whatever. I'm slowly concluding, Mel, you've done more of that than most other people that I've heard about. And so I think you ought to start thinking about an article on this subject, Mel. Don't think you should keep that light under a bushel basket. We've got a total of about 3 people who have signed in. I think Paul wants to tell us what's going on in space. I think we should go through that list and then come back to these particular subjects. And so, John and Wesley, you're going to hear a lot more about us tonight. Yeah. Let me go over to Joe, the next person who signed in, because when a person signs in and he has to wait 2 hours before we get to him, I can see how he's going to start using a salty language with us. We don't want that. Although Joe doesn't do that. W-A-2-R-Y-Y. You sounded very good when you first signed it in, Joe. Go right ahead with your question or comment. K-2-R-I-W in the TechNet.
Well, good evening. I'm glad to see my radio hitting a repeater full quantity tonight, or somewhere around there. My question was, does anybody on the TechNet or yourself, I don't know, have any information or experience with what's called a TAC antenna? Tango Alpha Kilo Antenna. I was helping a friend of mine adjust one of these things for 40 meters, and you say to yourself, if you make it resonant, then you have the ability to radiate. Well, we made it resonant, and it doesn't seem to radiate.
Wow. I mean, this is one of the things that I worship, the concept of resonate first, then you can radiate. 98% of all the antennas operate by that means, in my opinion. And the only major exception I know about that are the fact that resonate versus to radiate, that is a so-called standing wave antenna. So of the 5,000 kinds of antennas, that's my rough approximation, I can say this group of antennas are standing wave antennas, and they resonate. This very small group of antennas over here are traveling wave antennas, beverage, rhombic, and a few similar ones, where there are a whole lot of wavelengths long on the side, and the signal travels down the wire of the beverage or the rhombic and hits a 600 ohm terminating resistor at the end. The signal travels down the wire only once as a traveling wave antenna, and they have some very unique characteristics, and that antenna, properly constructed, can be very broadband in frequency and does not resonate. Now, this TAK antenna, brand new one on me, maybe other people know about it, Tango Alpha Kilo. I think you're saying that you resonated it and it did not radiate. Are you about to then tell me, Joe, that when you took it out of resonance, then it radiated? And tell us how, what does the antenna look like? Is there a website where we can see one? You've tickled my curiosity on this one, Joe. So the H2RYY, you sound very good. K2RYW in the TechNet.
know the website. It's probably the name of the antenna. Could be .com or .net. I'm not sure. I haven't. I'm sure if you even just put the name TACTENA in Google, you'll probably come up with the website. Okay, let's see. They answer one of your questions. What does it look like? The easiest way I can describe it, if you take a side view of the antenna, if you're looking at it from the edge, it just looks like about something about maybe 2 foot in diameter. If you look at it from the side, it looks like you took wire and wound it in a pattern that looks like a jelly donut. Okay? This thing's supposed to have the length of wire equivalent to each half of a 40-meter dipole. It's supposed to resonate approximately at 7,200 kilohertz. We got it to resonate. I used an antenna bridge with my service monitor to be able to get the thing to resonate. And it shows about, TFC just cut in. And it shows about a return loss of neg 15 to neg 16, neg 17 at resonance. And it has a bandwidth of 10 dB return, negative minus 10 dB return loss. It can go up as high as 7290 and down to 7120. Back to you, Dick.
I took your suggestion and I Googled the word TACTENA, and the first thing that came up is the TACTENA 40 multi-bander, EA5AMM is the particular picture I'm looking at. And it looks like a you know what a cavity back spiral antenna looks like, and this is a pair of those spirals. Both spirals, the plane of the spiral is perpendicular to the boom, and there's a pair of these on the boom. Call one the reflector and one the director, or one the driven element and the other one the reflector. A spiral antenna is a kind of traveling wave antenna, which doesn't really resonate in the normal manner. If that's what this thing is doing, if that signal starts off at, let's say, the center of the spiral and spreads outward, in the case of a cavity back spiral, the signal keeps traveling along the spiral until it hits the portion of the spiral which is approximately one wavelength in diameter, and then it does its radiating. So a properly constructed spiral antenna, they put a cavity behind it to make it radiate in one direction as opposed to both directions. It's basically a bidirectional antenna, a pure spiral in space. I call that a traveling wave antenna. Yes, in my mind, that one doesn't require resonance at all. And when you try to look at the standing wave ratio of the antenna versus the radiation efficiency at your favorite frequencies, you'll find a peculiar relationship. Under normal circumstances, let me drop. If you plot the, if you sweep an antenna in frequency and you plot how much signal it radiates, because you've got some kind of an antenna range with a broadband sensing antenna, sensing what comes out of your antenna that's under test. And you, under normal circumstances, you look at the standing wave ratio plot and you look at the radiation plot, and you'll see a strong correlation. Where the standing wave ratio is the lowest, the radiation efficiency is the highest. That's the usual for a standing wave antenna. In a case of a traveling wave antenna, he's got a brand new set of rules. His standing wave ratio or his reflection coefficient can go up and down in funny ways, and yet the radiation characteristics can be almost flat or something else. So because this, if I understand correctly, on the first hit I got on the website, if that's a similar antenna you're talking about that falls into the category of a traveling wave antenna, he's got those other weird set of rules going on here, Joe. And yes, I'll right off the bat accept the fact that that antenna violates the rule number one, resonate first, then you can radiate. This guy doesn't have to resonate at all. If that's the one we're talking about, Joe. W2RYY, did I get the right one? K2RYW in the TechNet?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't looked at the website at all. I haven't Googled it. I don't have a computer on. I was just helping a friend of mine, a fellow amateur, KB2WHN, who does listen to this TechNet from time to time himself, to try to get this thing to resonate. We tried working this thing off the ground, like a 5 or 10 foot above the ground type of thing, and the interesting thing we found out with just moving the cable off the ground between the antenna and the antenna bridge, just moving that physically changed the resonance or how it appeared or how deep the null is. So it's a So I suggested to him, let's put this thing on your roof, put it where it's finally going to rest, and try resonating it up on your roof. We did do that, and he doesn't seem to get out with this thing really at all. And I don't really have an explanation, so as long as you're seeing the antenna picture on the website, that's what the thing is, I guess that's what the thing is. It's not really a director reflector. It's, well, I don't know. One side of the coax feeds one half, one fire side feeds the other half. And you also don't feed it at the same points on the antenna either. We found out just using the simple antenna bridge that it doesn't work like that. You had to feed it in actually different points between the bottom starting point of the wire and going up like one and a half turns compared to like, say, a half turn on the inside, that type of thing. It seems to hear okay, but doesn't seem to really transmit okay.
Yeah, you got to be careful with that judgment, Joe. I can take a reasonably good HF receiver, 80 through 10 meter receiver. I take an ordinary random length of wire with a clip lead on the end of it, and I simply connect it to the center conductor of the UHF connector on the back of the radio, and I'll go out and receive signal, beautiful signal-to-noise ratio on 80 meters, 40 meters, 20 meters, whatever. The S meter will not deflect as far, but you get a beautiful signal-to-noise ratio. And then you try to transmit into that piece of clip lead, and it's going to have a 100-to-1 standing wave ratio. The transmitter will trip out, and nobody but the guy next door will hear you, if you know what I mean. Those are the peculiar characteristics of a receiving antenna. If you've got a receiver with enough dynamic range, enough range to its automatic gain control, on receiving you can get away with murder. A wet noodle, so to speak, will probably receive under some circumstances into a well-designed receiver on the HF band, because the signal-to-noise ratio is depending on whether or not the antenna has the right pattern. The gain of the antenna could be minus 20 dB, and you'll get nowhere near as much S-meter deflection, but the signal will sound the same if you go to a full-size antenna properly tuned when you're receiving. Now, because this thing is called TACTENA, it has all the earmarks of a commercial product. That implies if he bought this antenna, maybe he got it on the flea market. Let me drop. But hopefully there's a set of instructions somewhere as to how the manufacturer intended this unusual antenna to be used. I think step number one is follow the instruction manual. Do what the manufacturer told you to do. Start off there. This particular antenna, I led you down the garden path. In other words, I gave you a philosophy, a religion, saying resonate first, then you can radiate. And I forgot to tell you the last little caveat, and that is, yeah, that's true 95% of the time, but there's a very small class of antennas out there that don't work that way. Those are the traveling wave antennas. This might be one of those. So is the guy the original owner? I'm going to guess the answer is no, because if he was, he would have had the instruction manuals in his hand. He would have put it together exactly like they said. If he was unhappy with the results, he would have had the manufacturer on the telephone saying, I just bought this thing. It's under warranty. Can you help me? I am guessing he might be the second owner. He might not have the instruction manual. And maybe he's not using it in the way that was intended yet because he has the lack of that instruction manual. So this is a different antenna, and we're all being challenged by this one, Joe. From E2RYY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, K2KEY would have commented on this.
And they also make this same antenna, a more expensive version, for 80 meters. Now, my thought was when I first saw this thing, how can you take this thing that's wound up and make this thing resonate at all? Well, not resonate, but actually perform equivalent to some sort of dipole type of antenna on 40 meters, much less 80 meters. It does raise some questions, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to go over to Mike. Yeah, Mel, I'm going to go to you in a second. Let me ask you the very first question now, Joe. Do you believe this friend of yours who has this TACTENA antenna, do you believe he is not the original owner? He doesn't have the instruction manual? Is that sort of how you got involved? Over for a quick one to you, Joe.
I never said that at all. You assumed that. It's a brand new antenna. He has the instruction manual. And he did contact the manufacturer. And the manufacturer told him to take it inside and tune it up on his kitchen table. That's what the guy directly told the guy to do.
Oh, the thickens. Okay, this is getting a more complicated case. Okay, Mel's going to straighten this out on this one. K2KUI. Mel, what should these poor guys do? K2LIW.
Okay. Dick, if you'll remember, and it's just in the back of my mind now, we had a similar question on this antenna. Ooh, maybe a year ago. There was somebody else that had purchased it and sent me a lot of information that they had derived from it, and we had quite a discussion on this TAC antenna. I picture it now. I remember it on a short boom, this two spiral thing, and on this very, very compact, and they had one, I could say, for several different bands. And I think we did quite a discussion. I did get, quite a bit of information on it. I thought most likely it would be on the amateurradio.tv, Dick, the discussion over.
Always makes me feel a little bit funny when you go back to some of your own material and use it as a reference, because your mind is not, because we've got volatile memories. I'm not remembering the discussion. Thank goodness you did. So apparently we discussed it before. This is a controversial antenna. This is an antenna with capability. However, you got to worry about something. I have, at the factory where I work on a daily basis, I have over the last 2 or 3 years seen people developing antennas where on the bench they thought they were getting great results. The instrumentation said, gee, the standing wave ratio is good, and the radiation pattern is a little bit ugly, but at least it is radiating. And step by step, we slowly convince these individual people that they had set up a situation where the outside of the coax cable was the primary radiator, and that the thing they called antenna was just a lump of stuff at the end of the feed line that was launching a signal back onto the outside of the cable. And although that's not always undesirable, 90% of the time, if your transmission line is doing the radiating and not your antenna, quite often you're going to be unhappy. And if the manufacturer is telling him to set it up on a kitchen table under non-working conditions, in other words, there are certain antennas that are intended to be used indoors. I can't think of the name of that super compact antenna right now, this antenna, I presume, by the photograph I'm seeing, it's mounted on top of a tall pole with a ham-em rotator-like thing underneath it. So it's intended to be an outdoor, up-in-the-air antenna. And why in the world a person would be requested to tune it on the kitchen table and not under the working conditions, that scares me a little bit, as you can see, Joe. I wonder, what's the real history of this antenna? Is it a respected design?
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
I would particularly like to know if anyone has ever done a product review on this antenna. So he's the first owner, he's got the instruction manual, he's unhappy with the results, he's followed the instructions, he's called the manufacturer, and he's got a difficult to understand approach to what the manufacturer told him to do. I think that's what we've settled on so far. I'm not saying this is a bad antenna. I'm not saying it can't work. But I'm hearing signs right now that the approach up till now is certainly unconventional. And to tune an antenna indoors, if it's intended outdoors, you can tell that scares me. And there are various ways we can all teach each other as to how to measure whether or not significant RF current is flowing on the outside of the cable, because in most conditions, not all, in most conditions, that is undesirable. That can give you a lot of RF in the shack, whereas your lip comes over to your D104 microphone, you arc over to it, and it's very uncomfortable, as well as creating quite a bit of television interference in some circumstances. So B2RYY, tell us anything you want to. K2RYW in the TechNet.
Well, we try, okay. We tried a couple of different things. Let the repeater reset. Matters. Okay, we're also using this thing with an antenna tuner. And the antenna tuner is good for 2,500 watts of power, because he did try putting some juice into it, like about 400 or 500 watts worth, and it still really does not seem to radiate. I took my analyzer and hooked it up to the antenna, in its roof location, and I can certainly receive stuff at fairly decent levels, amateur-wise, and even going up and down in frequency, stuff that we consider in the shortwave band, 100 kilohertz, 85, even going down like, 6,500 kilohertz, and seeing shortwave stations at decent levels, like minus 50, minus 60 dBm coming into the antenna. So it certainly is receiving. It just doesn't seem to transmit back.
Yeah, as I was saying earlier, to quantify whether or not it is receiving, by whether you get an S7 report on your S meter, or whether or not what comes out of the loudspeaker sounds good, you got to go slow with that analysis, because a receiver is extremely forgiving. I can use an antenna with a 100-to-1 standing wave ratio. An antenna may be resonating at 21 megacycles, and I'm using it 8 megacycles. I mean, that clip lead that I put on the back of my receiver falls into that category. And I'll get out of the loudspeaker a reasonable sounding signal, not very much S-meter deflection. So depending on how you judge the fact that it seems to be receiving, once you know that the receiver is so forgiving, you got to be careful that you don't overjudge that one. And also, when you say it's not transmitting, well, there are times when a really good antenna on the band, I call a CQ and I get no answer and I think I'm not getting out. But if I run a test with somebody at a known distance when the band is known to be open in that direction, he says, yeah, I'm getting US-9. There's nobody on the band, or nobody wants to talk to you, but you're getting out like a charm. So to judge whether or not it's working by way of a field strength meter, this particular antenna is hard to judge with a standing wave ratio indicator. The fact that he's got, hopefully, a very broad tuning, 2.5 gigawatt antenna tuner, helps. And now, let me drop, we've got a problem here of conservation of energy. Let me drop. If he was able to put, let me pick a number, 500 watts into his antenna tuner, and his transmitter kept cranking, and the input standing wave ratio on the antenna tuner, once the antenna tuner was working correctly, showed, let me pick a number, a 1.5 to 1, reasonable load to the transmitter, and the transmitter is cranking out 500 watts. 500 watts, in my mind, has a huge amount of heating capability. That's close to what my microwave oven will put out, and that will cook my turkey or my hamburger real fast. That 500 watts is going somewhere. Hopefully the antenna tuner is not smoking, so he's not heating it up as, he's not burning it up as heat. Hopefully the antenna tuner is well shielded, so he's not radiating it. The transmission line, if it's being used in a reasonable manner, it's supposedly not radiating. The antenna is not burning up. Where is the 500 watts going? If I had a thermal imaging camera, that would be the best of all worlds. I crank out 500 watts, I press the key down, I put a brick on the key, and I wait a couple of minutes and I start taking thermal images. Well, that's the ideal way. We can do the poor man's equivalent of that. Press down the key for 5 minutes, let up the key, and run over there real fast and touch everything with your hands. Is the coax hot? Is the antenna hot? Is the antenna tuner hot? If all of those things are cold and you're cranking 500 watts, that's a lot of joules of energy, and you do it for 10 minutes, and everything is cold, by the law of conservation of energy, there's nothing left. It's got to be radiating it into space somewhere. You may not like the fact that it's a Nevis antenna, and it's aiming it straight up, and nobody is there, and they're not hearing it, but it's got to be radiating if it runs cold, and for some serious period of time, you can put 500 watts into it. So I think you can see left-handed, there's a whole series of simple tests you can do to find out where in the world is the power going. Ain't no other way you can waste.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
The only way you can waste RF energy is to turn it into heat. If you didn't turn it into heat, it went somewhere. In the case of an antenna, almost 98% of the time, it went into space. I call that radiation. You may not like the pattern, but did anything get hot? And maybe you guys want to go run that experiment, Joe. W-H-2-R-Y-Y, K-2-R-Y-W in the TechNet.
Scott, I thought of the things that Dick Nadler would tell me to do in the back of my mind. He said, he'd be telling me to put my finger on things to see if they're hot and they're using up power. nothing was hot. The antenna tuner terminals in the back cold. Of course, I didn't have the case open, so I couldn't touch the components inside, but nothing, you couldn't feel anything hot to the touch or even warm. The thing that we did notice, though, even with the antenna tuner grounded, like his transceiver and his amplifier were grounded, at one particular point, I thought that either him or myself got a bite with something just touching the case as we're trying to tune this thing up. Now, he also did take my antenna bridge and disconnected the antenna tuner from the back of the amplifier, and I wanted to see what the amplifier was actually seeing, and it truly was. I had a return loss of minus 38 to minus 40 with a very sharp peep. As I tuned it with the amplifier, and the amplifier said that I was putting out power, I had a lot of power going out, and no return loss or an SWR of something just about immeasurable. And my instrumentation pretty much told me the same thing. It was at a very narrow bandwidth, much narrower than the antenna itself, but it told me that it seemed like the entire circuit going, looking into the antenna tuner and then out to this antenna contraption after that, it was resonant. That's what it seemed to look like as far as the instrumentation was concerned.
And that's a somewhat normal condition, Joe. I can start off with a really traveling wave antenna. Beverage, rhombic, leaky dummy load, towel bar antenna. These are all non-resonant antenna. Towel bar antenna is basically a leaky 50-ohm resistor with a rod going to it. But you'd be amazed how many pieces of military hardware are using that. That's one of the main antennas at very low frequencies used on the EA-6B Navy standoff jamming aircraft. Works extremely well. So I take this non-resonant antenna, a very broadband antenna, like a rhombic or a beverage. I look at it directly with my network analyzer, and I'll see a fairly flat curve. I may see a 1.7 to 1 visual with a bunch of bumps, if you know what I mean. I put an antenna tuner between my transmitter and that antenna. The inductor and capacitor circuit of the antenna tuner allows you to resonate, allows you to increase the performance at one selected frequency at a time. One selected frequency at a time, you can make any antenna with a self-respecting antenna tuner look perfect. It'll be a 1.00 to 1 standing wave ratio at one frequency. But the antenna tuner used resonance within the antenna tuner to accomplish that. So a broadband antenna, a truly broadband, high-performance antenna, where you put an antenna tuner on the input connector to it. Now you look into the antenna tuner. You will see a narrowband antenna compared to what you previously had. Normal condition once you understand what's going on that case. So far you haven't violated any physics, but the 500 watts you put in there, and it seemed to run cold, it sounds to me like it was radiating. You may not like the pattern, and the fact that you did get the equivalent of sparking or whatever in the shack, in other words, you
repeater, timeout, cancel.
You felt the presence of RF energy in the shack when you touched things. Told me that there's a substantial amount, quite possibly there's a good amount of RF energy going back down the outside of the transmission line, coming back into the shack, and usually that is undesirable. And if the manufacturer is telling you to use that effect on the kitchen table when you're tuning the antenna, that doesn't strike me as a really kosher way to do things, if you know what I mean. We got a bit of a mystery here, Joe. And so, what do you intend to do next, and how do you think we can help you, other than sympathize with your condition, where we've not all understood yet, and what do you believe you should do next? And I hope you didn't ask me what you should do next, because you've already done some of the right things. W-H-R-Y-Y, K-2-R-I-W in the TechNet.
What? Okay, well, I guess this is the second mystery I brought to this brook, the TechNet. Remember many months ago, the other mystery was the choke that didn't seem to work right, even though by instrumentation you thought it was working right, okay? So this is mystery number two. I'm not sure what to do next. I don't own the thing. I was just trying to be a nice fellow amateur and help the guy out who was a little less experienced than I was with, you know, doing this kind of testing, and he didn't have any service monitor with an antenna bridge, which by the way covers like 1 to 1,000 meg. So so is well within the, you know, the means of the instrumentation as far as what it's trying to measure. I'm not sure what to do next. I'm really not. We didn't try this actually inside and put power into it. This was, all these tests were actually done with the thing on the roof. And when he gets back from vacationing or wherever the hell he is now, we'll go attack the problem again. I guess one final question. From you looking at this thing in a picture on a website somewhere, and you see these things with a horizontal boom and these two spiral antennas at the end of these two spirals, what polarization do you think this thing is? My first thought was it looks like it's sort of radiating and a sort of vertical type of polarization. Would you agree with that or disagree with that?
If it is a true spiral antenna, and physically at first it looks like a spiral antenna, then it would be, I think by definition, radiating circular polarization. And if you look at it from one side, it'll be clockwise, and you turn it 180 degrees, and look at it from the other side, it'll be counterclockwise, assuming it's got some bidirectional characteristics, if it doesn't have a huge front-to-back ratio. Let me try one other thing that might help you here. Hopefully we got enough people listening tonight. Maybe somebody has even second-hand or third-hand information. Does anybody know about the TAC-tenna, Tango Alpha Kilo Dash Tenna, T-E-N-N-A, that particular product? Has anyone ever done a product review? Have any of your friends own one? Does somebody love it? Does somebody hate it? What is the history of this antenna? Within the body of knowledge that's listening to us right now, does anybody know anything about that TAC-tenna that can tell us? Even if it's second-hand information, please give us your call letters right now. K2RIW in the TechNet.
That's K2KEY.
Bell recognized. Anyone else? Okay, not a big horde of people here that got experience with this one. Okay, so your memory is a lot better than mine, Mel, because I don't remember this one. So I think you're saying a year ago we discussed that you and I are going to have to go back to our archives on amateurradio.tv and find out what we said the first time. And I hope what we said has got some sense to it. So what do you remember, Mel? K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay. Dick, I'm trying to find what I remember. I don't remember how he phrased it, but definitely I can picture the goddamn thing because we looked at the picture even of it sitting on a pole with the two spirals and how it was fed with the coax. The whole business, I remember seeing it, was like out in a field and it was being hand-operated, you know, hand-rotating the antenna. And we did somebody reviewed it. We had a lot of info on it at the time, Dick. And for the life of me, I'm trying to remember. I've come up with it, I guess, in some part of the net, maybe. And I'll remind we did really look into it in depth, and we did come up with some answers because we were approached with the same question. And I, for the life of me, I just can't remember where, but I can picture the antenna. I can say those two spirals on that little boom, Dick, sitting on a pole. Over.
It looks, Joe, like what we're going to do is give ourselves a homework assignment. Go back to try to re-derive. It's sad that we didn't remember it, but you got these two old guys here. What, I mean, they get senile. You know what? Can't remember stuff. CRS. That's a friendly way of saying it. Guys of our age run into that one, Joe. That's something for you to look forward to. We'll give ourselves a homework assignment to try to find out a little bit more about this one. It's a bit of a mystery. Let's hope that it's a good antenna. The fact that so few people seem to know anything about it is scaring me a little bit. I don't remember seeing a product review of it, but I may have forgotten that too. Hopefully there's some websites where people are saying something. If the thing is being commercially sold, there's going to be a website somewhere where somebody says, I hate it, or I love it, or it's okay, or it's as good as the manufacturer says, or it's an all right antenna, but it's 3 dB lower than the manufacturer says. Even that is okay in some circumstances. So we'll give ourselves a homework assignment to look a little bit further, Joe. Once again, another mystery coming from RYY. You got to go easy with us, Joe. I mean, way back in the old days of the TechNet, we used to say you stump the group of experts that gather here, and you get a free dinner for you and your lady friend. Well, we run a little bit more economic now. We haven't offered that that prize for some time, but it looks like you'd be the guy getting the surprise, Joe. Any final comments before we go over to the next person, Joe? HURIW in the TechNet.
No, not for this round. Next time I sign in the TechNet, I'll try to bring another mystery question up your way. HURIW in the TechNet, WHOYY.
Okay. Matt, you're next. KC2, Yankee Delta Tango. What would you like to talk about tonight? KQRIW in the TechNet.
Okay. I'm currently helping out another ham that John is aware of. He lives in Brooklyn over on Hart Street, which is between Bed-Stuy and Williamsburg, off of Bushwick there, closer to the Williamsburg side. He is having issues getting into the Limelight computer. He currently just has just a handy talkie with Jetstream tri-band antenna with pretty good gain on it, but he's unable to get into the repeater system. We tried using my mobile antenna to get in, and again, we weren't able to get into the repeater from that. Is there any suggestions or other things that we could try, different antennas, or if you just need more power on that, because I know he's only transmitting low power, because that's all he has. But again, he's trying to strap the cash, so we're trying to get the quickest and least expensive way.
Okay, I'm going to tell you a little bit of a story that's going to help you understand what I'm about to say, Matt. Handy talkie to handy talkie. You ask any guy you know, self-respecting ham, what's the kind of range you can get out of a pair of handy talkies? It'll come up with an answer something like a mile. The answer is close to 3,000 miles. I personally experienced that. During Owen Garriott's space shuttle mission, one of the first times he turned on a Motorola handy talkie from the space shuttle while he's 220 miles up in the air, and he's over Texas, 1,500 miles away from me. And I'm using my ground plane antenna in my automobile in the parking lot at Deer Park, and I'm hearing a beautiful signal from him. Handy talkie to handy talkie, almost 3,000 miles, if you have true line of sight. But you take that handy talkie you own, hand it to your favorite friend, he goes walking down the block, and by the time he's a mile away, you have trouble talking to him. It's because of all the stuff in between. The only way you can avoid all the stuff in between is to obey rule number one for a VHF antenna. A VHF antenna, where you're trying to talk to a repeater, you first try to locate yourself in a place where there's no blockage. Well, the man lives in Bed-Stuy, he doesn't want to move, I don't blame him. Let me drop. What makes an antenna on VHF work well? There's three things. Altitude, altitude, and altitude. If he built a 50-cent coat wire antenna with a 3-to-1 standing wave ratio, a really yucky antenna because he did a lousy job, and he's got bent-up coat wire, and he didn't solder it very well, but he mounts it on the chimney of his house, and he brings down some reasonable piece of transmission line. Maybe in the beginning he can only afford an inexpensive piece of RG-58, but he's got the antenna with some real altitude mounted on the chimney of the house, a piece of coax coming down into the house, and he plugs that into the handy-talkie. He's going to get out like gangbusters. Not because the antenna's got more gain, not because he's corrected the visuar. The antenna is higher in the air. It is clearing more of the terrain. It is outside of the house, the shielding of the house, the aluminum siding, the gutters. It's above all of that, and it's clearing some of the local houses. It may not be the complete cure for him to have jetful quieting to Limark, but it's going to make his signal 20 decibels stronger, 3 S units stronger, so to speak. 100 to 1 stronger in apparent power output if he adds altitude. So you can experiment with brand A, B, C, D antennas you plug into the handy talkie in the shack with you, and you'll see very little difference. You start adding some altitude, and he could find out immediately by climbing onto the roof of the house and operate the handy talkie. If he's got a ladder, he can get up there, and if he's not afraid of heights, he'll find that out immediately, even before he builds the coat wire antenna. But a yucky antenna up high will way outperform a gold-plated Cadillac brand of antenna that's mounted in the basement. You see where I'm going on this one, Matt. KC2YDT, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, yeah, I was figuring that same thing. The issue is the location where he is, he's unable to mount anything up on the roof. The landlord is always looking for ways to kick him out of the area because he sued them numerous times and once. So I was looking for some sort of... He's lucky enough where he's on... He's the second apartment from the roof, so he has a high altitude, and he has a fire escape. Now, I was wondering if it could possibly be the fire escape that was causing the interference with the antenna, or if there's any other direction that he should be pointing the antenna. Away from the fire escape.
K2KEY, I think I got an answer for him.
Go ahead, Mel, and I've got some comments also. Mel first, K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay, also have been there sort of operating under some severe conditions. What I did when I lived in the city to hit a number of the repeaters, I found that what I used actually was my mag mount, my 2-meter mag mount from my mobile, and I stuck the mag mount out on the air conditioner that protruded out, just stuck it out there, and the counterpoise was the case of the air conditioner, and it did a world of difference of just putting that antenna outside of the window stick. So simple mag mount, if he has an air conditioner, may be his answer. Over.
That's a good one, Mel. And the air, fire escape usually is made out of steel, highly magnetic material, and sticking a mag mount can do it. But I think, Matt, you can even do another experiment. Right now, where you're standing, you can hold your handy-talkie in your hand while you're using it in the listening mode, and you rotate it right, left, forward, back, and you translate it up and down. You will eventually find a position in your room. If you're not less than a mile away from the repeater, you'll find a position where you can make the signal disappear. And if you had an S-meter receiver, an S-meter indicator on your receiver, you'll find another way you can hold it where you can make the signal peak. So because of multipath that you've got in a metropolitan environment, as you simply move the antenna around and move the handy-talkie with its rubber duck to various positions, you'll find peaks and valleys. So now he can run a quick experiment by having the handy-talkie, hopefully somebody's on the Limark repeater, that's the one he wants to get to, and he's using it in the listening mode. And while he's in the listening mode, he walks around, he gets onto the fire escape, he goes up and down, he goes to the bedroom, the living room, the dining room of his apartment. Maybe his apartment is on the east side of the building, and Limark is on the west side of in the west direction, if you know what I mean. He's got to go through the whole darn building. But as he moves around, he's going to find a hotspot, a place where the signal is really coming through good. And then he can mount an antenna there. And even though the landlord doesn't want anything outside the house, there's all kinds of ways you could run a piece of RG58 cable up the side of a fire escape. And if the fire escape is painted black and the cable is painted black, nobody's going to see it. And the antenna doesn't have to be a great big thing with red paint on it, if you know what I mean. There's ways of making an antenna that is very small looking, essentially invisible, but it's in the hot spot. by walking around with that handy talkie, he's got a first find in his environment on the second floor from the top of that building. Somewhere, maybe it's his bathroom, but somewhere in his environment, there's a hot spot where he gets a nice, strong signal. And then he's got to find a way of putting an antenna in that hot spot with a cable going back to the position where he wants to operate. Yes, if this is the best of all worlds, he'd love to be able to sit on the living room couch in front of a television set with a handy talkie in his hand, and it works like a charm. That may be one of the cold spots. But if near the bathroom window is where a hot spot is, and he runs a cable from an antenna sitting at that window, maybe it's a mag mount, and he runs a cable under the rug, and he brings it over to the living room couch. Now he can plug in that cable through his handy talkie. He can have the convenience of being on the couch, talking with the handy talkie, and the antenna itself is in the hotspot. So I know there's a solution to his problem. He's going to have to do a bunch of experiments. I wonder if that makes some sense to you, Matt. KC2YDT, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Okay, yeah, that makes actually very good sense. The next question which I have is that now I have a mobile antenna on my phone. Now, is there a special connector that would connect the, with the usual connector that goes into the mobile or base station antenna radios to an SMA connector that we could get instead of having to snip the coaxax and, play around and having to, change the whole connector.
Radio Shack, WB2HWW, South Adapters.
Yeah, Howie's right on that one. There's a zillion kinds of adapters, Matt, and some of them are a little bit pricey, some of them are quite cheap if you shop around enough, but no matter what your connector is on the left-hand side and what you're connecting you desire on the right-hand side, somewhere in the planet, somebody makes an adapter. And the adapter...
Tip on this, please.
Go ahead, Howie.
He wants to get the one from Radio Shack that has a piece of cable. It's about 8 inches long, Teflon, because you don't want to bring the coax right to the radio. You don't want to put all the weight and leverage, because you can break the connector.
Another very good point, Howie. So you want to have a flexible pigtail. So just the adapter will get you on the air, but mechanically you may break off the connector on your radio. Some radios have got a simple SMA connector, and when they're only firing into a rubber duct that's very bendable, that's okay. You put it into a great big long adapter, into a stiff piece of cable, and you can get yourself in trouble. So think about the mechanics. That's what Howie is recommending, a flexible link. And you might have to, in order to create that flexible link, you may have to buy a length of cable with an SMA connector on one end, chop off whatever is on the other end and solder it down to the connector that you've got. You may have to do some home brewing. And sometimes the soldering in there is a little bit difficult. You may have to take it to somebody like Mel who knows how to solder anything, or take it to Andy. So one way or another, do think about making it flexible. Make sure you don't break off the connector. But the problem of adapting Sex A and Type B antenna connector into anything else, the world is filled up with adapters, because if you go to the right website, you'll find out that there probably are 30 different kinds of popular RF connectors being used now. Somewhere in the planet, somebody is making an adapter that goes between every one of those 30 combinations, if you know what I mean, Matt. And finding the adapter is only half the problem. Make sure you don't break off your connector. Make sure it's flexible enough. KC2YDT, K2RIW in the TechNet.
KC2FYJ with a comment.
FYJ, start off with your name and give us your comment, sir.
Hey, Dick, it's Harry. I haven't checked in ages, and I just wanted to make mention of the fact that frequently at the Limark Ham Fests, there's a woman who comes in who sells every kind of adapter for antenna connections that you ever wanted to think about. She's got like four tables full of them. She usually comes to the indoor ham fests only. And of course, we just had one October. The next one won't be till February. But you might want to have him check that table out.
Comment, Dick.
And Harry is one of the directors of this club who I should have recognized right away. Go ahead, John.
Matt, might want to check out testparts.com. They have every connector you can think of. Fairly reasonable, too. So back to you, Dick.
WS2N.
Go ahead, Paul.
You offer a ham radio outlet. You call them and you tell them what you have and what you're going to. And they'll sell it to you. They're always like $9, $10 for that type of thing. For that, you know, for that, just what he's looking for.
KC2FYJ again.
Go ahead, Harry.
Yeah, I think I must have hit my tuning dial and drifted off. Did you hear any or all of what I said?
We heard every bit of it about the lady who appears at the Limark flea market, who has every kind of adapter in the world. She's got bin after bin of them. I also mentioned that Harry's one of the directors of this club, and I should have recognized him right away. Is that approximately what you said, Harry? Go ahead.
Yeah, it is. I didn't have the lock on my tuning head and hit the wheel, so I wasn't sure if I had moved frequency while I was chatting or not. But yeah, that's exactly right. This is KC2FYJ.
Okay, thank you for John, Paul, Harry. And so, without a doubt, there's a solution to this one, Matt, and you'll find it. If not, come back and ask us the question again. KC2YDT. Good luck with those projects. Over to you, Matt, for any final K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I just looked in the manual and everything, so I know exactly what connector I have already. I have an M connector, so I'm going to need to use an M connector to an SMA connector. But yeah, like I said, I'll definitely try it with my mobile mag mount antenna. I think that's a good first step, and also see if even with my mobile, if I pull up right by his house, put it on 5 watts, if I'm able to reach the repeater or not. So thanks for the information, and I'll let you guys know how it turns out.
Yeah, I've got a final comment on that one, Matt. The test you're going to do with your mobile with the 5 watts down at the street level is an indefinite test. If it works well or if it doesn't work well, that's still not what goes on in his apartment. The way multipath works is very specific to location. Take a known good handy talkie with the squelch set nice and light while somebody is transmitting on Limark, because that's the one he cares about, we'll assume, and he walks around to every room of the house and holds the handy-talkie, tilting it to the left, tilting it to the right, tilting it forward, tilting it back, translating it up, down, left, and right. In other words, move it into every cubic foot of your space, of every one of the rooms of the house, and try every possible orientation, and find out where the hotspots are. And quite possibly you're going to find a beautiful hotspot somewhere in the house, and you can mount an antenna there and put a cable over to where you want to operate, which maybe is the kitchen table. Or, again, with the handy-talkie, you walk around on the fire escape to the various floors and the various locations with the various translations. In my particular house, I'm 20 miles or so from the repeater, and if I want to listen to Limark in the morning with my handy-talkie in the bathroom while I'm shaving, so to speak, I have to put the handy-talkie horizontal on a plastic shelf in my bathroom is where I get the hot spot. If I put the handy-talkie vertical, I know that Limark is a vertical radiator. Let me drop. Limark is a vertical radiator, and common sense would say I should set the handy-talkie vertical. When I do, in my house, I get a ratty signal. I lay it down on its side on the plastic shelf in my bathroom, and that's where I get the best reception, and while I'm shaving, I can listen to Limark. That's the hot spot, and that's the orientation of the handy-talkie in my house that gives me reception when I'm sitting there at that time, if you know what I mean. So he's got to do a bunch of experiments. I guarantee there's some hot spots in his house where it'll work good enough. And so it's going to take a bunch of experiments. Down at the street level, you're at a different altitude with a different antenna on an automobile. And even if that works like a charm, that's not a solution for him to make good operation when he's in his house, if you know what I mean. Does that make some sense, Matt? Over to you, Matt, K2RIW.
Yes, that actually makes some good sense. So, like I said,